This is Metaphysical Universe, exploring science and spirituality with Dr. Douglas Kelly and Dr. Vicki Hunter.
And a good evening to you for Wednesday, January 25th, 2012. My name is Doug Kelly, and I'm here, of course, with Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Good evening, Doug. Good to be here with all of our listeners.
Yes, we welcome everybody to Metaphysical Universe. It is a weekly broadcast of the Metaphysical Church of Humanistic Science. We explore science, we explore spirituality, we explore the human condition, and sometimes explore the truly mysterious, such as chia pets, pet rocks, and sea monkeys. Yeah, those are interesting things are coming up. I'm sure that those have something to do with existence somewhere.
And this has what to do with metaphysics?
They're part of our existence, aren't they?
That's right, states of consciousness. You know, it's a very interesting show that we have coming up here that people might ask, exactly what does commitment, integrity, and pride have to do with metaphysics? But again, everything is relative, and particularly when we're studying the self. And that's what we do here. Study the self and all aspects of the universe.
That's right. You know, I mean, metaphysics is consciousness and existence, and it's nothing much left out of that. So, you know, it is a broad topic. So, anyway, we welcome those who are listening to the live broadcast tonight. We welcome those who are listening to the archive. Glad you could join us. If you'd like to be a part of the show tonight, if you're listening live, then please do so. You can ask questions in the chat room. You can also call in. The number is there on your screen, 714-459-3973. And Reverend John Hightower, as always, will be screening your calls. So tonight we're going to be talking about living with commitment, integrity, and pride. And as I wrote in the write-up there, that these can almost sound like, oh, okay, we're going to talk about those things, you know, bland, not really truly exciting. But honestly, they are a part of our life, our everyday life. And they're not often given the consideration that they're due. So tonight we want to talk about these different things in relation to different things in life. We're going to be talking about relationships a lot because those three things do come into play in either a good or bad way. So we'll discuss those. We're going to, I guess, start off with commitment. Right, Vicki?
Yes, Doug. And geopets.
Yeah.
Chia pets and your commitment
chia
to
pets. Chia
your
heads.
Commitment to your chia pet. No,
and
kidding.
Great.
You know,
additional hair.
We do try to lighten it up. I mean, before we begin, can I inject for a moment, please? Because we have forgotten 2 weeks in a row, and I'm not going to let that happen again, Doug. We must make mention of Mike Voice in England. He's been such a good friend of the show, supporting the show, and I would like to thank Mike Voice. And for people who don't know who Mike is, he's been on our show before. He has his own show in England. And go from there, Doug. You have his information.
He's Mike Voice. His last name is spelled V as in Victor, O-Y-C-E. And he has a show on Blog Talk Radio. It's just blogtalkradio.com/Mike Voice. And he talks a lot about reincarnation, has a book out on it, and We've had some nice discussions with Mike. As you'd mentioned, he'd been on our show in a few months ago. It's in the archives if you want to look it up, when we were having a few shows on reincarnation. So he's been very nice. He's always talking about us, and so we just wanted to mention. And if you get a chance, go look him up on Blog Talk Radio.
And he mentioned you in an article very recently, didn't he?
Yeah, he's
not too long ago.
He has. He's mentioned me several times, and you know, he's just a wonderful guy, especially because he's mentioning me. Just kidding.
Yeah.
But he's a great guy. I mean, and his wife Christine, they are a very nice couple. And he's had a lot of kind of realizations in his in recent years and regarding reincarnation. So he's written about those.
Well, and thanks. I didn't mean to mess up your momentum there, Doug, because we do have a good subject matter tonight.
Yeah,
we really
do
want to talk about it. But I just could not. I just didn't want to overlook, because I've had it up on my whiteboard 2 weeks in a row, And I keep saying, oh, I did it again. So I'm really glad we just took that moment because, you know, all these people out there, they're very important to us, and we appreciate the support and we appreciate the input, and we like to reciprocate. So, mm-hmm. you know,
yep.
And that's part of the commitment, isn't it? Is that,
oh, of course,
that is part
part of integrity, yeah, and commitment.
And how we have exchanges. One of the bigger complaints that I do hear from people, you know, is people attempt to extend kindnesses and don't seem to get it back. You know, people make a commitment to be kind, generous, giving, and, gee, it doesn't seem to be coming back. But what I try to remind people, and I need reminding myself, is I can't give up who I am and the integrity of who I am to make my commitment to, as our philosophy is, do no harm, do right. And I continue to take pride in that. So this is how I believe we link these experiences together. You know, commitment, integrity, and pride. And of course, we can not only apply it to these simple things, but where it seems to stand out the most is in relationships and mm-hmm. generally in partnerships. And what kinds of commitments we make when you take your wedding vows, for instance, or... Oh, you know, you make a commitment to do things for people or your partner, and sometimes...
Or employer.
There you go. Sometimes we can take these things too far, so we really have to determine what is a commitment. Like, what is that? When you commit to something, you know, at what point is it not enough or too much? And just that evaluation of the word commitment.
If you think about it, a commitment is really a promise to do a particular thing. And, you know, just taking the example of employees, employers, I mean, there can be a lack of commitment on both parts. And this can apply to any type of relationship, but we have to look at it. If we've made a promise to do something, are we following through? You know, are we following through with that commitment? Now, in a lot of cases, we're not talking about anything nefarious. We're not talking about criminal activity, usually. I mean, that can come into play, too. But typically, are we following through on the commitment? And what if we do promise to do a particular thing, we commit to a particular thing, and then the rules change? Because that happens all the time, too, especially in business. And it can also happen in personal relationships. You know, at what point do we say, let's, you know, time out here and let's renegotiate the agreement?
You know, you just said something there that I think is really critical, that the rules change. And very often people are changing rules and not letting anybody know.
All the time.
You know, and it does. You've seen it all the time. I've seen it all the time. And I think this is when, in particular, when you talk about the workplace, you get hired to do a job, you go to the job, you are supposed to get paid a certain amount of money in exchange for doing that job, and the next thing you know, you've got, you know, 12 more responsibilities than your original agreement.
Mm-hmm. That happens all the time.
And, what do you do with that?
Let's focus on that for a minute. Let's focus on the workplace for a moment before we get into the personal relationships. And I can offer a couple of things on that. And so if you're in business, if you're a manager, if you're an employee, these different things will apply to you. And that's why job descriptions are so important, so critical for companies to have, because it basically establishes a list of expectations. What's expected of the employee for the job? What's expected of management? And it's when those expectations change without any kind of a discussion or communication, that's when problems will arise. And what, on the part of employees, what has happened so often is so prevalent in business, at least in American business, is the sense of entitlement. A lot of employees just expect the world. They're entitled to everything, and they don't feel like they have to work for it. And that's entitlement. It's opposite of what I call the ownership, not just me, but what's called the ownership attitude, where an employee will act as if they're the owner of the business. That means commitment. That means really doing the job to the best of their ability. And of course, integrity is involved here. On the part of management, there's also a commitment to employees to do things, to be fair, to have a good working workplace, an environment. And so commitment is all over the place in the workplace. And we have to remember that. If you agree to some job, to be employed by a company, you're basically agreeing, okay, I'm going to trade my time. In most cases, it's your time. If you're an hourly employee, you're trading your time to work. And so it doesn't matter so much what you do during that period of time that you're at work. You're trading your time for a paycheck. Now, that changes slightly if you're in some of the management positions, specialized positions where you're paid a salary, or you're in a specialty thing where you're paid for not just your time, but your expertise more than anything. And so it all comes back down to the commitment we make. And what happens when the rules do change, you're going to work with certain expectations that were established in the beginning. Now those have changed. Well, the first thing to do is to get those on the books, so to speak. Those need to be included in the job description. And if the workload is more, or the responsibility, I should say, is a lot more, then, you know, there's going to have to be some compensation for that, in all fairness. And that's what companies should do. So what do you do, though, if there is none of that? You know, you've agreed to do this job, you're doing your very best, but they keep loading more and more and more responsibilities and different things. Well, now you have some decisions to make. And I often, and this is not mine, I learned it many years ago. It's called the three L's. You know, anytime you're in a situation like that, you have essentially three choices, three L's. You can live with it, you can lobby for change, or you can leave. Those are your options. So we have to really ascertain the level of commitment we're willing to make to a particular project, to a particular company, to a particular vision, etc.
Well, it's exactly when the rules change that people get into trouble, because they feel as a subordinate that they don't have up. Is that checking in with yourself? You know, that what are your integral values? What is what you expect for yourself, and what kind of standard? But keeping in mind that, you know, you're at the mercy at times of having a job. So perhaps a good idea is to wait until there's the job review time, or you know, there's always an annual, you know, job review.
Yeah.
Or you're at your 3 month, you know, what do they call it, like a probationary time.
Yeah, there's often that.
And so these things can be addressed in a good way, a positive way, to say, you know, I am happy to do this, but it really wasn't what I understood in the beginning, and that wasn't what my job description says. Can we redefine my job description? And maybe it means being graded differently in your paycheck if you're, you know, that class one, class two, or whatever position you're in. And to address it in as positive a way, to make yourself available, the willingness to do it, but also respecting that, in all fairness, there's some kind of compensation for that. And then if you're not getting that, then certainly, well, you either live with it, you know, you continue to lobby for change, or you leave. And this, it's very easy, not easy, but I think it's easier to negotiate money in these ways than it is emotions. Because when you're in a relationship and you enter into a committed relationship, you have the emotional investments, and the negotiation platform changes entirely. And especially if somebody's changed the rules. You know, you get into that relationship, you believe you have an understanding, you could have talked about it till you're blue in the face, and then, whoa, something new comes up you had no idea about. And you know when people, I think, really notice it is when they have children together. No matter how much you discuss how you're going to parent together and the promises that you make to each other and the commitment to the family, you know, very often the, you know, it's the woman usually who ends up with the, you know, the greater burden of the workload. And, you know, somehow those, the agreement's different and the rules changed. So people find themselves, we all find ourselves in situations like this where we, again, have to check in with ourselves. Now that live with it, lobby for change and leave, excuse me, isn't quite so simple then. It gets a little more complicated, especially, and this, at the risk of bringing up this subject, especially if you have been brought up in a very religious background that, you know, has all these requirements of you to be good. And in the name of being good, you will endure persecution. You will endure giving up your values and some of your integrity for the sake of the appearance, the pride of the organization, as opposed to your self-pride.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very risky, touchy stuff for people, but it's this is why I think it's probably some of the most important discussions that we can have about commitment, integrity, and then pride, because it all comes back to the self.
The question is raised, at what point do you actually terminate a commitment or, you know, change a commitment? Well, there's some principles involved here that we have to keep in mind. Principle number one is any commitment we make should be first and foremost to ourselves. We have a commitment to our own selves first and foremost, a commitment to our own integrity, to our own well-being. That's first and foremost. Then we have the principles of do no harm and do right. So at what point should a commitment be abolished or gotten rid of or changed? Well, you have to ask, is it violating the commitment to yourself? That's one question. A second question is it violating the do no harm principle? Is it violating do right? If it is, then some changes need to be made. And it doesn't matter whether you're an employee, a manager, in a relationship, a friendship, an intimate relationship, a marriage, it doesn't matter. You know, we have to maintain our commitment first to ourselves, and we have to make sure that that's doing us no harm too. We're part of that. So many people, well, I don't want to do other people harm, but then they allow themselves to be harmed or their boundaries violated by whoever, and they don't think about that. You know, every one of us is perfect the way we are. Every one of us is worthy of good, worthy of good treatment, so to speak. So remember those principles. If you're in a situation, a relationship, where you're wondering about whether you should honor your commitment, if it's a toxic relationship, you know, it's time to reassess. And I speak from experience on this. And, you know, years and years ago, I was in an alcoholic marriage, and I remained in that alcoholic marriage for many, many, many years because, well, I didn't know what else. I've tried to you know, fix it, because that's what codependent people do. But I was in it, and I remained in it because of my religious beliefs, and specifically in the Bible where it says God hates a divorcing. So, you know, of course, in the beginning, I just wanted to keep my family together, very well-intentioned. But when it became a nightmare every day living that way, I had some thinking to do, and it took a long time. It took many years to finally step out of it, to understand, because I looked for solutions everywhere. I went everywhere. I went to Al-Anon. I went to the NED. I looked at books. I read everything I could. I could find no solutions. And that's when it hit me. The solution that I was looking for was outside of my belief system. Within those parameters of that belief system, there was no solution to it. It was only when I stepped outside of my belief system, in other words, I rethunk my whole core values, my beliefs, and so forth, it was only then that I could find the solution. Of course, that was to leave it and to take my son with me. So that all worked out, and it was a great lesson. But the commitment, you know, was I committed to making my marriage work? Sure. Sure I was. But at what cost? It was killing my son. It was killing me, literally. And if you haven't been in that situation, you won't know. But if you have, you'll understand what I'm talking about. So, you know, I could say, yes, I have a strong sense of commitment, but my commitment was in the wrong place. My commitment was to my religion, to God, to the status quo, the fact that, you know, you just don't get divorced. That's wrong. You know, you'll be looked down upon. My commitment was in the wrong place. It wasn't properly aimed at my son and me. When I finally, woke up and rearranged things, then I understood that commitment has to be to my son and myself first, foremost.
That's what I call a spiritual death. Mm-hmm. You know, when you say it's killing you, it's that slowly your flame is going down. You know, you're losing your fire. And that's what I call a spiritually diminishing, where you're putting out way more emotional, mental energy, and you're not being fed. You know, you can't feed yourself, basically, to replenish your energy. So the self becomes way out of balance. And I think this is when, in any kind of a situation, we have to ask, are we out of balance? You know, I've seen some very fascinating dynamic between people when, they enter a relationship, all seems good, but somebody starts getting sick. It's really interesting because the other is kind of like a vampire of energy. And rest assured there's some kind of dysfunction in there, something really unhealthy where one is putting out receiving. And so certainly an alcoholic relationship will do that. Any kind of an addictive type of relationship will do that. But I see it also even in the simplest things of behavior. I think most people who have been divorced can certainly appreciate that they get into a relationship. It seems well. We think we're doing really well. You make the commitment and, wow, the rules changed or something changed. It's like, okay, but you made a commitment. The question is, what did you make the commitment to? Was the commitment to the individual no matter what? Or was the commitment based on what you understood? And I think this is where communication is critical, to always keep things out in the open, to be free, to be yourself, to be verbal. If people are even the slightest bit inhibited, if you're the slightest bit unnerved to be free, to be yourself.
I think we lost. You're cutting out. If we're the slightest hesitant to be ourselves, then?
If we're the slightest bit inhibited to be free to be ourselves, then something is amiss. Mm-hmm. Something's not quite right. So the question is, what did you make the commitment to? And, you know, I very often try to weed through this with people, and I've had to do it with myself, about I made the commitment to the dream, but maybe I had the wrong people. You know, it seemed to fit, it seemed to be okay, but it wasn't the full thing. Or there's hidden information, you know. So it's very important that we establish in the communications and a freedom of communication to know what you're committing to. And it's tough. You know, things can happen. I very often tell people and myself and remind myself, because we're all human, life happens. Things change. So how it can be going, a great relationship for 10 years, 15, 20 years, and something happens, somebody changes, life happens, and not everyone responds to life and its challenges in the same ways or in a positive way, and it just changes. You know, when somebody has had to, and you know, this is a terrible one for a lot of women to go through, where they've had breasts removed from cancer and intimacy changes, the rules change, and the whole dynamic without the communication, without the counseling. But some people can't get past it. Do you know, it's and so the commitment is to what? So it's not necessarily to the individual through thick and thin and having a good sense of values and integrity. And there we go with that word integrity again. But it's that it's been a little bit misplaced. And I think what we don't understand is there's stuff about us that we don't really always know until we're there. So we do our best to give commitments with the information that we have, knowing that nothing is going to remain that way. So we have to be more resilient to change. But still, the commitment is to one's own self, one's own ideals, before it can be to anything outside of ourselves. And that is integrity. So integrity to the self, then we can all look at life situations differently and respond to it healthfully. You know, unfortunately, Doug, when you're in an alcoholic relationship, you know that you could not leave. Your integrity demands that you could not leave until you had, in all good conscience, exhausted every avenue for, you know, keeping that relationship intact.
Absolutely. And that's what took some time. But then there came a time to reexamine that commitment. And you mentioned integrity, because isn't that what it is? You know, we can, the same as with commitment, integrity can be misplaced too. You know, what integrity was I most focused on? Well, you know, it was misplaced too, because I wasn't showing integrity to myself and what I should have been doing, until, of course, I did.
But you don't know that until you have within that frame of information that you have, because it's tough stuff to encounter life, deal with life based on limited information and experience. You know, it's very easy for me to have a lot of really great answers now, because I've been there, done that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what does happen when we take the benefit gain benefit from other people's experiences is knowing how to cut through the walls a little quicker, because you didn't know what to look for. You didn't know what you were looking at. You didn't know what the possibilities and the repercussions would be. And look, very often you think, well, I can handle this. Your philosophy might be that it's better that my son is with his mother. We stay together. It's the commitment of the family. And you don't, because you don't have a frame of reference that it is affecting your child in ways, because you don't know that.
Right.
Until you start seeing the really obvious, you know, ramifications. So
yeah, I should have known that, though, because I was that child. So, you know, but you grow up and you forget, you know,
I think all the more reason why you try to make it work, because you endured it, you know, and you don't realize just what kinds of filing systems your brain has and how your emotions are processed. If you were a healthy adult child of an alcoholic, you know, background, then you would know better. But if, see, most people do not know what formulas or what we're looking at when we are the adult child. You know, I came from an alcoholic background too. Until I got healthy, I didn't know what I was looking at in other people.
Yeah.
So
obviously.
I think this is what I mean by that commitment. We're making a commitment based on the information that we have. Hopefully.
Well, yeah, we always do that.
Hopefully, that's the point of open discussion, that, you know, if we can all put more ideas on the table and share a little bit more, then we can all say, you know what, I've been making a commitment outside myself. I've been making a commitment to a belief system I didn't even know I had. I've been, you know, and to keep asking those questions. Now we're working with integrity. Now we're restoring integrity. So no matter how far off base, because, Doug, no matter how far off base you got, in that situation, which is very tenuous in your marriage, you still retained enough sense to ask yourself the right questions to get back to that center integrity.
Right. You know.
So you didn't get that far lost.
No, I didn't get eternally lost, and some do, but a lot of folks try to find their way out of it, and a lot do. I mean, that's back in that, jeepers, this has been 13 years ago now that I'd left that situation. And when I was in the process of trying to figure it out, and I've said this before, you know, I went to Al-Anon, I went elsewhere, I was looking, I could find no solution that was really aimed at helping you resolve an alcoholic relationship. I couldn't find anything anywhere. So, you know, then I just developed one. It's called EmpoweredRecovery.com, and it's been there for over 10 years and has helped thousands of people to do the same thing. And speaking of this whole alcoholic thing, Becky in the chat room talks about, what about the person who becomes an alcoholic to shut out an alcoholic? Would that be codependent on a different level? And I think, yes. You know, you're still trying to control things, which is what codependence is.
Can't beat them, join them.
Yeah. Well, there's some other things it is, too, you know. I mean, it's think about it. You know, you're self-medicating. You're trying to you know, go numb. You're trying to get out of it when the integrity part should come into play and say, you know what, I can't live like this. This is not the way to live. This is not healthy. You know, it's like, you know, you've got somebody who's hell-bent on killing themselves, and so you say, well, gee, I'll join them too. So I'll start doing things to kill myself. That doesn't make any sense. And that's essentially what it is.
Well, I think that the point is, when you've made a false commitment, there is no sense. And the mind takes one heck of a journey, you know. It's like going through, you know, a corn maze. And it does. The thinking, and then it loops, and then it finds another corner. And, oh, there's a dead end. Well, let's back up and go this way. Let's try this. Let's try that. Because it won't let go. And this is where I think sometimes it goes beyond the commitment into winning, you know, and then you've lost your integrity. Somebody wants to fix somebody else, you've lost your integrity. If you want to, you know what I'm saying, Doug.
Mm-hmm. Well,
we lose ourselves because we're trying to win at something.
Well, you think about, there's so many reasons for that too. I mean, we lose ourselves. We lose the integrity, the placement of that integrity where it should be first and foremost with ourselves. We end up buying into somebody else, even if it's trying to control them. We're focused on them. We've lost ourselves. We've essentially lost our identity because we're so focused on somebody else, trying to fix them, trying to do for them what they could and should do for themselves. And so we have to wake up from that. And as Kathy in the chat room says, I think we endure things because our brains set the path, and only until our souls scream out do we listen. Essentially, you know, until the pain of change becomes less than the pain of remaining the same, we won't change. And the other part of that is, oh, wow, that thought just fled. So it'll come back, and I'll mention it again in a minute. The part about integrity, though, is where do we place it? I mean, we wouldn't put integrity into somebody with criminal activities. We wouldn't place integrity, you know, being committed to somebody like that. But let's bring that now into us. What about our own integrity? And, you know, my basic definition of what's integrity, well, it's what you do when nobody's looking.
See, that's brilliant. It really is brilliant.
Well, I'm sure I heard it somewhere.
It speaks volumes to who we are.
What are you doing when nobody's looking? This is a huge part of integrity, and this is where I personally see a lot of room for improvement, you know, at the world at large. And this is like on the internet, you know, it's the old story about forums, and people will go on forums or Facebook or whatever, and they can be pretty mean because they're hiding behind anonymity. They're hiding behind a computer screen. They would never dream of speaking like they sometimes do if it was one-on-one or, you know, face-to-face. And so just as a question to ask yourself, how do you act when nobody's looking? How do you act when nobody expects it? It goes back to what I've always said. You need to know who you are and why you are who you are. You need to know what you stand for, and then you need to stand for it regardless of who is there, because you're being who you are. Be who you are and make sure that who you are is based on healthy core values. You have to just do the right thing regardless of who's watching. That happens too often, the negative side of that. Go ahead.
Well, let me throw another one in here. You know, in the world of metaphysics, we often talk about the paranormal activity. I happen to, in my whole lifetime, in my reality, talk to spirits. I'm very sensitive to spirit energy. So even though I think I can hide from people, I'm not hiding from them. So here people say they believe in spirits, but they continue to try to hide behind something else. And I say, ah, spirits are watching you. And, you know, whenever I've said that to people, their eyes go big, their mouths drop, they didn't think about it. I say, oh, yeah, you know when you're alone and your quietest of moments, they're there.
Yeah, and I have an agreement with them. They're stay the heck out of the bathroom.
Or the bedroom.
That too.
You know, we are not as alone as we think we are, but people do think they can get away with that. So, I mean, who you are when what do you do when nobody's looking? It's a huge exclamation mark to check in with ourselves in that regard. Who am I when nobody's here, when I'm all by myself, me and the dogs, you know, when nobody's looking, how do I behave? What am I thinking about? What is, you know, again, am I consistent with myself when I'm alone as with I'm with other people? Am I the same with you, Doug, or and other people I know? Because this is another thing that people tend to do. And when I was very young, I did this a lot, and I really had to catch myself. It's like having a friend for every emotion.
Right.
You lose your integrity when you do that.
Yeah.
Totally. It's like when I want to have fun, I call this one. When I want to, you know, cry my eyes out, I'll go here. And then people wonder, well, how come nobody knows me? Well, it's because you got a different face for all these different friends.
Yeah, and you have to be who you are all the time, regardless of who you're with. And that's an excellent point you bring up. You are the same regardless. And this is often what I teach when I'm teaching public speaking. When you're on a platform, be who you are. When you're down off the platform, be who you are. You know, be a real, live human being.
You know, one of the things that happens when you live outside yourself, you get false pride. That's when the ego part takes over, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
We get prideful in things that we do rather than for who we are and how we behave and how we fulfill the commitments to ourselves. You know, I really do take pride in the good chocolate cake I make.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, I take good pride
in
that.
Sounds good to me.
You know, and I've had to work on the icing thing a little bit because sometimes it's a little too sweet, but I found different recipes for that, and I make a kick-butt cake. I see there's a wonderment and a healthy pride that comes from saying, you know what, I'm really good at this.
Mm-hmm.
And I make that, you know, it shows that I am, I believe, comfortable with myself in my life. And when I hear it from other people, I get really excited. But hear me clear, I'm the first one to tell you, I just could not do angel food cake for the life of me. Mm-hmm. Until one day I actually read the darn recipe and it said, do not grease the pan. I went, duh. You know, Vicki, if you'd only have read the darn recipe 20 years ago, you'd have made angel food cake.
So the lesson there is, you know, read the directions.
And sometimes we overlook the silliest things when we fail. It's we have to be lighthearted, and we have to see the humor in ourselves, because usually it's the smallest things that trip us up.
Oh, yeah.
So we just need to stop for a moment, realize, what am I taking pride in? What am I getting frustrated about? And, okay, you know, just back up, breathe. My commitment is to myself to be all that I can, to be an improving human being. I'm not going to beat myself up for all those bad angel food cakes.
Mm.
I'm not. But it's also a matter of saying, boy, that was really stupid, Vicki. You know, that was a really dumb thing.
Yeah.
I don't know what I was thinking. But it's okay. It's totally okay. And then to move forward and say, well, I wonder what the next thing I can learn about myself is. And you see, if you keep going back to your integral ingredient, the integral ingredient of yourself, to always be an exploring, evolving, advancing, progressing human being who is doing no harm and doing right, you can never go wrong. So So, you know, I was even asked today, what if you make the wrong decision? And I said, there is no wrong decision.
Right. That's true.
Because you can change your mind in 5 minutes.
Yeah, but even if you make a decision that didn't turn out to be the best decision, you still gain from experience, and that's what it's all about. And that's what so many people kick themselves and beat themselves up. Well, I made the wrong decision. No, you didn't. You did the best you could with the knowledge, experience, and the capabilities that you have at the moment. You can do nothing else. That's all you can do. Just do your best. If it's the wrong decision, you learn from that error or that mistake, and you go on. You move on. You don't beat yourself up. That's what life is about. It's about experiencing things. It's about gaining that experience. You can't go to college for it. You have to live it. And so make sure you understand that. You're perfect the way you are, and you're getting better every day. You know, and don't forget that we're human beings. Today, I might do something really well that tomorrow I don't do so well. In other words, your best today can be not quite as good as your best tomorrow or next month or next week, next year. There's some fluctuation there too. We all have our off days and our on days, but always do the best you can and remain true to you.
You know, the best cakes I ever make is when I'm in a good mood and I'm feeling a lot of love for who I'm baking the cake for.
But isn't that true with everything? The best things
exactly.
we do is when we feel good about our life, ourselves, who we are, what's going on. That's true. We always do better work.
So the question then is, when do you bail on a commitment? When do you really bail? When do you bail? For me, when I know I have to compromise myself, it's over.
Yeah.
I make changes in my life. The moment I know I have to compromise, it's a very important word. When I have to compromise myself, it's over because I can't live with me. And it has nothing to do with other people anymore. It has to do with I have to live with me. So even if it's, you know, even in the past when I've had to work for somebody and, you know, it's gone too far and I say, whoa, you know, I have to do something unethical here, or I have to do something that's going to compromise my values, I do an inventory and say, no, this is a tipping point for me. This goes beyond my boundary. So I back up. You know, relationships are the same. When I've had to face those really integral moments, there we go with that word again, those integral moments where it's pivotal to say, uh-oh, this crosses my line. This goes over. I would have to give something up of myself that's really important to me. Can't do it. It's over.
Mm-hmm.
So I think when you knew, even in your marriage, your alcoholic marriage, when you had, there was a moment when you knew you'd have to give up too much of yourself. You would compromise your integrity. It was over.
That's true. And that also reminds me now what I wanted to talk about. There's so many psychological reasons why we don't remain committed to ourselves, why we don't maintain our own integrity to ourselves. And that is something called secondary gains. You know, there's always a reason if we're in a toxic relationship and we won't get out. There's a reason for it, and it's an indirect reason. What do we gain from remaining in that relationship? Whatever we gain are secondary gains, and there can be many of them, and some of them are tough to overcome. One is finances. If I leave it, how will I make a living? Maybe I don't have a job. Maybe I don't have any skills, whatever it is, but there are always ways to overcome that. You can get a job, you can learn skills, you can educate yourself. What are the secondary gains? If you're in a bad circumstance, a bad situation that you want out of, ask yourself, what are the secondary gains? What do I gain from remaining in this situation? If you're really honest with yourself, you're going to uncover those secondary gains.
Well, which brings us to a point that I'd really like to discuss. And it's that difference between love and like. This is a critical inventory, everyone. You can love somebody. You can feel love for them, but not like them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's that addiction to love. I think there's a song about that, addicted to love.
Yeah.
You know, the addiction to love, the addiction to the chemistry of love, when it has, the relationship has absolutely no sensibility to life at all. It benefits your daily life in no way whatsoever, even financially, but you stay there anyway because you're addicted to love.
Addicted to something.
Well, you know, there's so many other variables. And what you're saying about the levels of psychologies here, there's so many of them. But if I clear it up by saying we have a spiritual love, we have a mental love, we have an emotional love, and a physical love. And if you can go through an inventory list of what it is that your attraction or, you know, that, you know, compulsion is with somebody, at what levels are they, is this individual activating you? And what is it that you're so compelled to stay for? And you go through that list and then do the, this is what I like about this individual on one side of the paper and what I don't like about the individual on the other side. And it's very interesting to see the kinds of qualities or characteristics that you'll write down. Because most of the time when people are in relationships, they're in the relationship for the idea of love, not because there's anything functionally loving about it. And this is where I say love is conditional.
Mm-hmm.
It is conditional. It is conditional to how it behaves. Love is not harmful. Love is not diminishing. Love is not powerful over others. Love does not take away somebody's right to think, their right to speak, their right to feel, and their right to behave as they feel free to do so. The minute an individual feels diminished, there's something not right. So we have to take the inventory.
Yes.
You know, you can like somebody because they're smart, and you can be attracted mentally to somebody. It doesn't mean you have to sleep with them.
Mm.
You know, you can be attracted spiritually to someone and have this overwhelming, oh my God, I just know them. And it's just overpowering. It doesn't mean you have to sleep with them.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean anything except that. Until you know someone better, you can have that instant connection that makes you want to know them more. That's good. Then get to know them more. Get to know him or her more. Get to know how they are mentally and emotionally, physically, and see how it all lines up and if there's a good fit at all levels. You see, the liking somebody and the loving them are distinctly two different things. Because if you love somebody and you don't like them, it's not going to work. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah, not gonna happen.
It will have a clock over that sucker, and it could last a week, it could last a year, it can last 10 years if there's a lot of secondary gains that somebody, you know, as it goes. But
you made some great points on what love is, and I might add another one, that love means allowing somebody to be who they are without judgment, without trying to control them, allowing somebody to maintain their own identity. And if you can't, if that doesn't resonate with you, if you can't live with who they are, then that's the time that you leave, you let it go, you release it. And
then there's withdrawals.
Yeah.
You know, reminding, no matter at what way, at what level you decide that, you know, this isn't working anymore, there is a process for withdrawals. And you have to take yourself through that process. Fulfill that moment with something else so that the addiction gets further away. And it really is an addiction. Because
yeah.
In reality, you know, it's not working. But there's this compulsion to keep going back to it. And this is where people get into a lot of trouble beyond the commitment to the self and others.
Another thing that can actually be an addiction in some of these toxic relationships, especially alcoholic relationships, is the crisis mentality. A lot of people are addicted to crisis, and they don't really feel alive unless there's a crisis, and they can very subconsciously even create these crises when there isn't one around. So unless you recognize it about yourself and then work to overcome that, you'll essentially live from one crisis to another. Have you ever known anybody like that? You know, it's like they're always having problems. There's always some crisis in their life. They go from one to the next to the next to the next, and they never understand that they're addicted to crisis. They don't feel alive without it.
You know, there's two chemicals in the body, glands and chemicals in the body, that are the primary culprits of that. One of them being adrenaline. You know, it's like if you, you know that adrenaline rush you get that you're nearly in an accident. You know, you're nearly in an accident, right, but you're not, your adrenaline's just pumping.
Right.
Well, very many years ago, 1972, the first shelter for battered women was established in Great Britain. And the woman who wrote a book about that later made a distinction between people who were truly battered women or who were addicted to crisis.
Mm-hmm.
And as she observed, that it's not the actual fighting that somebody wants. It's the rush they get before the fight. It's the adrenaline rush. So there is this adrenaline addiction that people can get, and crisis junkies very often have that. The other one is dopamine. It's addicts very often, they have this anything to get the fix, the rush, you know, in the brain. People who are gambling addicts get it, porn addicts get it, you know, anything that just gives that fix, and it's the chemicals released into the brain. These can be managed, by the way, but of course the first thing is to realize you got it. So if you know you have an addiction or you're a crisis junkie or you know someone's a crisis junkie, you know, it's to acknowledge what is triggering, or maybe both adrenaline and dopamine are going off at the same time, because then the body gets a mind of its own. So you have to get a partnership with the body, get in partnership to say, whoa, I think I'm needing a fix here.
Yeah, and if you do, you know, then you can use roller coaster therapy, right? Go get on a roller coaster.
You can. You know, anything.
That's not really true. That's
I call it trading up. Mm. You know, if you know you need a rush, trade up. Trade up to something that's less damaging and that doesn't take anybody else on your ride. So take that roller coaster by yourself. And it's a really important thing to do. So we can slowly minimize these kinds of addictions. So it's tough stuff. It's not easy stuff, but it can be done. But again, we're right back to the very beginning of the commitment to the self, integrity, keeping and retaining your own integrity. And that's self-study too. You know, if you know you're a crisis junkie, which I know I've had that tendency in my life. Well, hey, I think I got to change that, and I'm going to trade up because I don't like that one. I'm going to get a better one, you know, and have a good sense of pride in what we do and how we do it, and being able to hold our head up. That's huge. You see a lot of people walking down the street and how they walk? Boy, that'll tell you everything you need to know about how somebody feels about their self.
You know, you got me thinking about another aspect of commitment that I want to mention, and that's the things that we want to do in life. You know, we might have a bucket list, we might have things we want to do, and they sound interesting, we make a commitment, and then we don't follow through. And it's essential to follow through. If it was important enough to start, hopefully, you know, you did your research, you did your thinking, and you made an intelligent decision about it. Assuming that's all true, follow through. You know, don't let that commitment go. Follow through, because that's another huge problem with a lot of folks, is that they'll start things and then not follow through. That's what commitment's about, following through.
Or bail after the first attempt.
Right, yeah. If you've got a good reason to bail, fine, bail. But if it was a good thing that you wanted to do, don't let life get in the way, because life will get in the way. There'll be distraction after distraction after distraction. Don't allow those things to remove you from your dreams or from the things that you want to do. Follow through. If it was good enough to start and you enjoyed it and you want to do it, get on with it, because You don't want to end up, as I said 1,000 times, you don't want to end up on your deathbed looking back with a bad case of the woulda, shoulda, couldas, the if onlys, and the might have beens.
Yeah.
If you don't do it now, and if not now, when?
You know, maybe just a thought. If somebody is going to make an attempt to do something, you know, work at it, if it fails 3 times that way, then maybe it just means a reevaluation to try the same thing another way. You know, or maybe the timing isn't quite on. But just know, don't give up. Mm. Don't give up when you, you know,
if
in other
worthwhile.
Words, absolutely. You know, my grandmother always said, if it's not worth asking for, it's not worth having. It's brilliant. It's stuck with me since I was 3 years old. If it's not worth having, it's asking for, it's not worth having. If it's not worth doing, it's not worth having. So.
And if it is worth doing, it's worth doing right and following through.
Yeah. You know, Doug, we also wanted to talk very briefly before the end of the show. You have something new available to people through the Institute of Metaphysical Humanistic Science, a little mini course, correct?
Right. It's a new 10-day mini course, email mini course, and it's primarily designed for those who are not yet enrolled in the IMHS degree program, and it's there on the website at metaphysicsinstitute.org. If you're not already enrolled in the degree program and you've been thinking about it, you'd like to learn more about it, you can take this 10-day mini course on metaphysics, and it covers some of the most, you know, popular, attractive type things about metaphysics. It goes through a good variety of topics, including, you know, introduction to metaphysics, some advanced topics, death and dying, the law of attraction, meditation, the paranormal, and it, you know, goes on and on. So, well, it goes on and on up till 10. So if you'd like to subscribe to that and you're not already enrolled, it's not for people who are already enrolled because you're already learning it.
If they can tell their friends, if friends are thinking about it.
Just go to metaphysicsinstitute.org. And you'll see it right up there in the upper left-hand corner. It's a new one, and it's free and no obligation, but it should help. And we've only got a couple of minutes left, so let's take a quick minute to send out some positive energy to those who might need it. Send some positive thoughts and energy your way as well, because we all could use it. Next week, Vicki, we have another topic, the challenges of enlightenment. So we'll be discussing that.
And just how do you become enlightened when you're trying to pay rent?
Yeah, that's a good subtitle, huh?
Yeah, it's a good one. I mean, all the preoccupations with life, and yet we're, you know, aspiring to enlightenment. So we're going to discuss that next week.
Well, and that's going to be a good discussion. Obviously, we're going to thank John Hightower for being there to screen calls, but also helping behind the scenes as always. Again, I'll say it, if you have a topic you'd like to hear discussed, please email us admin@mchschurch.org. If you're looking for an alternative belief system, something that might resonate with you, if you're kind of tired of the regular stuff, visit us at mchschurch.org. Physics Church, read the Principles of Belief, and if they resonate with you, we'd love to have you join us there too.
It's been a great show. Thanks, everybody.
Yeah, thanks for joining us tonight. All the live listeners, those in the archives, and there are a lot of archives now, so if you're looking for something to listen to, there they are. Until next week, have a great week. Good night, everybody.